bicycles, I love the synagogues, I love the Lego, and I love the Lincoln Logs. I love the fishing lures, I love the plumber's snakes, I love the things that people make. I love the way that people decorate their homes. I love the ovens and the casseroles they make. I love the things that people make.
You are listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM. And my name is Sarah Mengel, and I'm always your host, unless I have some lovely hosts that fill in for me sometimes when I'm out of town. Welcome to the Funding Drive Raise Your Voice show for These Things That People Make. It's Thursday, October 28th, 3 days away from Halloween, and also 3 days away from the end of our funding drive. We're trying to raise $15,000. We're just over the $6,000 mark, so we have a bunch of work to do yet, but I want to say thank you to everyone who has pledged so far, and a big shout out to all the shows that have taken place so far. We've produced some really great radio, and CFRU has been around for over 30 years. We've been around for 30 years on the FM dial, but we are around much longer than that before. And currently, you can hear us in Rockwood, Aberfoyle, Kitchener-Waterloo, Fergus, Alora, and Guelph over the radio. And if you're listening on the internet, you can hear us wherever the internet is, and you can also watch us on cable. So I thought, you know, I have the opportunity to interview so many amazing people on my show. The premise of These Things That People Make, if you're listening for the first time or the first time in a long time, is I interview people who do things and make things that is not considered fine art. And we talk about the reasons behind or the motivation or the politics behind why people make things. And so I selected a handful of shows that I've done over the years. And I've been doing the show for a year and a half. So over the year and a half. And I'm just going to play excerpts from them. And in some ways, just to highlight the awesome people I've had the chance to interview. So the first one I'm going to do, it was originally aired on April 16th, 2009. It's an interview with Rebecca Singer about her zine, Knit Your Own Beard. And Rebecca is based in Halifax. She's a postal worker and she's an artist, and she's really nice and she gives really good haircuts. And so she made a zine about how to knit your own beard. And I thought, you know, it's getting cold. It's also Halloween. And also, I was thinking of being Peter Bradley for Halloween, and I thought all I would have to do, Peter Bradley is the station manager here. He's blonde. Sometimes we get mistaken for each other. I thought I just would knit a blonde beard and then I could be Peter Bradley for Halloween. So maybe this will motivate me to actually do that. And so we're just going to hear a slight, like just the beginning intro of her describing the zine and talking a bit about why she does the project.
It's funny, I made it about 6 years ago, so it was kind of nice to start thinking about it again and pull it out, because I feel like I haven't visited it in a while. It's, I don't know, it's kind of an abnormal size. It's like, I used that paper cutter to to chop it down. And I don't know how many pages it is, but there's it begins with sort of a little like introduction of what it is, and then a like brief history of knitting in Canada, and then I guess sort of a manifesto, like a little bit, not really, but.
Could you read the manifesto?
Yeah, sure. Knitting is no longer a tool for survival. It's a leisure activity. I propose that for survival in northern winters, knitted beards are needed, in partnership with mittens, hats, and scarves. For the space in between your scarf and hat, beard wearing might be risky, a statement, a group experiment. I hope you're up for the challenge. So I guess it's not exactly a manifesto, but...
It's a suggestion.
Yeah, it's a suggestion.
It's a very poetic suggestion.
And then after that, there's like a list of the equipment you need, which is not pretty minimal. It's just scissors and knitting needles and wool. Yeah, and then I put together like knitting instructions and sort of like a really basic introduction to knitting. And then it gets to a layer where there's like an adjustment layer so that you can like make it bigger or smaller for your face. Yeah, and then at the end, how to attach mohair so that you can, like, make different designs. Yeah, and that's kind of the whole thing.
And there's an acetate pattern.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the layer that I was hoping sort of, like, helped to explain. Because I guess I'm really visual, so I was hoping that people would, like, look at it and be like, oh, okay, that's why you have to, like, add stitches or reduce them or, yeah.
It becomes this, like, really special present in the middle of the book.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, whoa.
Yeah, I only know a few people who've like actually like told me that they followed the pattern, and I think they ended up having beards. So I hope that it actually works.
And did you invent the pattern?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. What inspired you to do it initially?
Well, it was funny remembering, like trying to remember what it was. Like I think it was like I was in a class. It was a zine making class at school, and I had a friend come to visit, and he had this incredible like new beard that I had never seen. And I think it was actually, like, beard envy and just, like, yeah, just thinking about how that's, like, not very often an option for women to just, like, grow a beard and living in a northern climate, how it's actually, like, such a useful feature.
I have this memory, actually, when I was in grade 12, walking into global history class and thinking, I think I'll grow a beard. And it actually took, like, the entirety of the 45-minute class to then be like, Sarah, you can't.
Yeah.
It was just this funny situation where... I just thought by deciding to do it, I would be able to do it, which I think is partly why I got so excited about your zine when I first saw it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting, too, because, like, often for women, like, beards are an unwanted thing, you know, like, it has to be, like, hormonal imbalance or, yeah, but it's, like, it is pretty much a winter necessity.
And do you have any of your knitted beards? Have you knit many?
Yeah, I have sort of a family of knitted beards, but I, like, soon after I made this, I sent them all off for a show in Germany.
So there you have it, knitted beards, these things that people make, originally aired in April 2009. If you want to call in and make a donation to this year's funding drive, I will give you personally a homemade drawing for any amount of donation. And we also have some other gifts I'll talk about a little bit later. I forgot to mention that these things that people make today is a whole hour long. So we went from knitted beards to now Alicia Lim and her very exciting 100 Butches project. And it's a comic book that's going to come out soon. Alicia is an artist based out of Toronto. And I interviewed Alicia on June 4th, 2009. And we will hear Alicia start talking about the history of that project.
When did the project start? When did you start making 100 Butches? started, what was that? It must have been like January last year, so just over a year ago in England. And I was kind of broke, and my parents were like, what are you doing with your life? And I was like, I have to prove I can do something. And was I, did I say kind of broke? I was destitute. And I was working this horrible job as a waitress in a London restaurant, and went online and looked up lesbian freelance opportunities. It's kind of cheesy. It's not like, I was inspired by this butcher one. No, it was like, lesbian freelance opportunities. And Diva showed up, and they were looking for a comic artist. And so I was like, wow, if there was a lesbian comic in the world, what would it look like?
Yeah.
What would I like to do? And I just thought that this was the most saleable product in a way. It's clear, and it has a lot of room for expansion. I just, yeah, I wanted to do something about butches and something with a really big number. So it could go on for ages and ages and ages, and now I kind of regret it because I have to come up with 100 for a book.
How many do you have now? You must have a lot.
Well, I decided to split it up into volume 1 and 2. So 1 to 50 is what I'm working on now, and I have 48.
Whoa! You only have 2 left!
Yeah. That's two, the hardest. Yeah. So that's how it started.
Okay. Wow. And can you talk at least a bit about what they look like?
Yeah. So it's 100 butches, and each one is an illustration and a story about a butch.
And they're all real people.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's. I said once that it's like 100 love letters in a way. Oh, that's probably a really overly sentimental way of saying, witches are my type. I think they're hot. And so I wrote about it 50 times. 50 more to come. But, yeah, so I think the easiest way to describe it would be to read one.
Yeah, please.
And I'm going to read my first one that I ever made. And I made it on the dining room table. I was sitting with my roommates, and I was like, I gotta do this thing. I've gotta make some money. And I like drew it out, and they were like making dinner and spilling on my paper, and it was a big mess. And I finally put it together, and I gave it to one of them to read, and she was like, you're onto something. I was really touched. Actually, my roommate and girlfriend at the time, Tal, was like the biggest cheerleader ever, really. Her and Dykes on Mics changed my life. But so this is on your left foot.
Sort of like a thong in an ass crack, come on.
I'm tip-bone alligators and little rattlesnakers, but I'm another flavor, something like a Terminator. Ain't no equivocating, I fight for what I believe. Why you talking about it? Just talking about it. Some calling me a sinner, some calling
So check out Alicia Lim's 100 Butches projects, among other projects, at newhearteveryday.blogspot.com. So, call 519-837-CFRU, that's 519-837-2378, to make a donation of any amount. We are raising money for a whole bunch of things, specifically thinking about spoken word programming like this one. Spoken word in radio is not just slam poetry, but spoken word is conversations, it's interviews, it's things not focused on music programming. And community radio, you know, spoken word programming means tons of people and tons of ideas, and news is talked about from people who, you know, aren't interested or cannot access commercial or public airwaves. And there's a lot I could say about, you know, the CBC or commercial radio. And maybe I will say it in the next little time here on the air. But I mean, if we're going to think about things people make, community radio is a really exciting thing that people make. And I came to community radio after finishing a Bachelor of Fine Art in Montreal, and leaving our art school with a lot of questions about the elitism and nepotism of the fine art world. Not very excited, not with a lot of practical skills. I will say that I don't regret doing it, but I was more interested in getting some technical skill. And so I started volunteering at CKUT, which is a really exciting campus community radio station out of McGill in Montreal, and instantly was thrown into being an on-air tech person. I had no tech background at all and had this idea that I didn't know how, like I was totally technically inept. And I think as a woman, I think that's a very common experience, and I don't think it has anything to do with our brains. I think it has a lot to do with socialization, and I will say that even now that I work at this radio station, that I've been involved in campus community radio for 6 years or more, people still don't think that I know how to hook up audio equipment at all, even as a musician. So there, sexism in tech world is totally real, and thankfully, there was a woman named Gretchen King who still works at CKUT as the off-the-hour programmer, who just sort of threw me into it and was like, you're going to tech. And I will say to anybody who's thinking that they might want to do campus community radio, please let this story inspire you. I totally messed up. Like I came in and I tried to work the board and I messed up and I ran around the station looking for someone to help me, and then somebody helped me, and then I learned it and I figured it out. And that's how you got to do it. And now I have a lot, you know, obviously, because I get to work here, I have a lot more comfort and confidence with around tech things. And I think that really it's about campus community radio is about this idea that really, like, anyone can come in here and press some buttons and talk on the air. And we want, as long as people have a sense of you know, not saying hateful things on the air, we want people to get involved. And in particular, we're looking for people to get involved in spoken word programming right now at CFRU. Why did I go on that rambling thing? We're raising money right now, and a lot of the money we want to put towards enabling us to produce more spoken word content and make it easier for people to make spoken word content. So we're raising money for more portable recorders so more people can go and do interviews and record panel discussions. And we're raising money for special programming so that if something costs a bit of money, we're still able to support it. And we're also raising money for a production board in our production studio so that people can use the production studio with more ease and be more excited and less frustrated in there. So please, if you can donate a small amount or a large amount, we would love to hear from you. You do not have to pay today. You just have to pledge, and then you'll have up to a month to pay, and you can pay from afar. You can mail us a check, or you can pay over the internet, or you can bring cash in, and we have a whole lot of gifts to give away. If you donate $25 or more, you get a CFRU membership, which means you're involved in our governance, and you get a CD, and if you donate $50 or more, you get a t-shirt and you get two CDs and you get a membership. And if you donate $50 or more, I just said that. If you donate $90 or more, you get a hooded sweatshirt, a bunch of CDs. And this is all in addition to other special giveaways that people are giving away on their shows. So yeah, don't hesitate to call 519-837-CFRU. Steve's hanging out in there. I want to say a great amount of thank you to people who've already pledged to my show. Oh, I also just got a pledge. So I want to say thank you to Allison Tibbles for donating $10. Thank you so much. That's awesome. I want to say thank you to Nadine Rainville, who just started doing a radio show here that I'm really excited about called Adventure Close to Home. It's a feminist-focused punk show. It's really exciting. And she donated $10. We got another anonymous pledge of $20, and that brought us up to $6,113. And I'll be back with more pledge info. And I have queued up an interview that I did with Liam Michaud from Montreal, who's talking about a really meaningful, important project called the Prisoner Correspondence Project. So, so he's just going to introduce his project. And you're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM. It's the Funding Drive. So why don't we start with you just describing a bit of the history of the Prisoner Correspondence Project.
Okay. Well, I guess the what grew into develop the Correspondence Project started up almost 2 years ago and basically emerged from a group that was doing similar work in the States that came out of a kind of youth anti-violence project there and was a pen pal program. And so that group was kind of inundated with requests and was also in the process of folding. And so we took on a few of us who were around for the project in its kind of earlier stages, basically took a stack of letters back to Montreal and then in kind of distributing them to queer and trans folks here in and around Montreal, we kind of realized the extent to which people were really interested and invested in talking about kind of queer imprisonment and how that happens and criminalization and policing and kind of all of the issues that kind of stem from that kind of correspondence. And so yeah, basically the project kind of grew out of that and started initially as just a kind of direct correspondence pen pal program. And so we basically took on as our central task to set those relationships up and then support them as they were unfolding. And so different ways that we did and continue to try to support them is through, you know, being in consistent touch with the pen pals on the outside and being like, what kind of support do you need? Do you need resources? Also providing people with some kind of initial tools about kind of navigating solidarity with prisoners and, yeah, providing even just like really basic logistical things like providing stamps and envelopes or setting up kind of meetings for different outside pen pals to come together and talk about their pen pal relationships or what they're facing or what, you know, what they're struggling with. So since, basically kind of since that initial pen pal program, that's since evolved into a kind of a number of other larger kind of projects or subparts of the project. So basically we started doing a lot of kind of programming on the outside, and so the I guess the mandate of the project has expanded a lot to be trying to get, I guess, trying to force our communities on the outside, whether they're gay and lesbian or queer or trans, to be thinking about policing and criminalization in prisons in a more consistent and in a more direct way and in a more critical way. And so by part of how we try to do that is by having different kinds of programming happening on the outside. So workshops where we talk about this stuff and where we present some of the writing by a lot of our inside pen pals, film screenings, different things like that. And so also, I guess, what the project has grown into is including a pretty expansive resource library on kind of on all sorts of, basically the resource library on queer and trans survival inside prisons. And so that kind of the focus of that resource library ranges from like really specific kinds of like concrete bodily survival in terms of like safer sex and safer drug injection use and, you know, safer tattooing, things to prevent HIV transmission or hep C transmission. So ranging from kind of very concrete bodily survival to different kinds of emotional survival. And so talking about, you know, we've been putting together resources of writings by our pen pals on the inside talking about, you know, what it means to be out in prison or what it means to not be out in prison or what different kinds of emotional survival practices they use to cope. And so, yeah, and then ranging from that to different kinds of, like, emotional and sexual survival, too. So including, so having parts of the resource library that's specific to kind of sexual representation and gay and lesbian erotica, and, you know, not creating these artificial divides between what resources people need, and just kind of like basically taking the lead from what we hear from all of our pen pals and being like, oh, what do you want? Okay, you want this? Oh, or else we'll start stocking it in our resource library. So that, I guess, that's kind of like the core of what the project has been.